This is a paid commercial program and may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology.
I'm Dr. Richard Schertz.
And you were on the wrong mic.
Oh, I'm on the wrong mic.
It works
mic.
Now.
Okay.
I think it's the one that you see dumped over like so much rubbish to your right would have been the normal mic.
All right, let's kick this off again. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. I'm Dr. Richard Schertz.
And I'm Jim Russ.
And now that I'm on the correct mic, we can review the week in technology. It was Apple's 35th birthday.
Wow.
And of course, yesterday was April Fool's, and Google has all of their normal April Fool's stunts
of course
that they like to roll out every year. They're not as good this year, Jim, but I'm going to still give a few of them of what they were actually talking about this year. There was a big cyber attack that was going after a lot of commercial websites against another SQL injection attack. Talk about that and how we're protecting from it. We got a tip of the week, how to get kinks out of your cable.
Ooh, good. That's a good one.
Yeah, and we also have a book of the week, trying to see when will science fiction come true. You look at science fiction, when will the science catch up with the science fiction?
Some things in science fiction have come true, haven't they?
Yeah, they are. That's things are moving, and there's a website of the week. A 3D solar system, which is really fascinating for your kids.
Yes.
And we will be featuring the man who was behind Juniper Network.
Mm-hmm.
Now, guess what country he's from?
India?
Yeah.
How about that?
You know, you look at all these technology companies, they always have somebody from India behind them because we had a lot of folks coming over here getting trained in technology from India.
Mm-hmm.
But now it is time for...
There's a letter in your mailbox.
Yes, I'm going to save the first forum discussion for later in the show,
okay.
I think. We have an email from Robert Tyler. Dear Dr. Schertz, a little while ago I read about a computer cookie called a flash cookie or local shared object, LSO for short. Now, the article stated that LSO is used by website to collect information on how people navigate the websites. About half the websites use them. What is it? How can they get rid of them? What is it all about? Thank you for a great show. I look forward to it every week. You and Jim Russ are a great team. Loyal listener, Robert Tyler.
That's very nice. Thank you.
Thank you, Robert. Well, local shared objects, they are called flash cookies, and they are actually a collection of cookie-like data that's stored on your computer's hard drive. Now, they're stored by all versions of Adobe Flash Player. And version 6 and above of Macromedia's now obsolete Flash MX. Now, this is the dirty little secret. When you clear the cookies out of your browser cache, it doesn't clear those because those are stored in the cache for your Flash player. So if you go to a website that's got Flash animation, they're going to store Flash cookies in it. I actually checked my cache. I had 778 Flash cookies on my hard drive, and I clear my browser cache every time I use it. Now, it is true more than half of the internet sites use LSOs to track users and store information about them. Now, the good news is that the current version of Flash does not allow third-party LSOs to share information across domains. So, like, if you go to a particular website, it only that particular website can reclaim that information, and it might be used to bring up your homepage configuration information. But another website that might use it for sending ads to you cannot use it. So that is a plus. But I don't like the fact that they actually share it, and by default, they're all allowed on your machine, and you don't even know about them. Now, users can only opt out of local shared objects globally. Now, what you have to do is you've got to go to the Adobe website to the Global Storage Settings panel, and that goes back into your computer and resets it. There's no way to do it on your computer only. And there's a link that I have to, well, actually, if you want to just find it by Googling, you can put down Global Storage Settings Panel, Flash, Adobe.
Okay.
And it will take you to a link, and then a little active window comes up, and there are tabs on it, and you can then clear the flash, and you can set it so that it will not allow any particular LSOs to be stored on your computer. Now, if in fact you don't want to do the global, if you see a flash animation from a website, you can right click on it and you can disable LSOs for that particular flash, but you do have to do it a website at a time. And there is no way to just accumulate LSOs and then go within your computer like with the browser cache and clear them. I really don't like that feature, and now there have been some investigations, some hearings about it, and I think probably the rules will change. But if you want to find out about that, you can come back to techtalkonline.com and go to this week's show's outline, and I'll have the link there, and you can clear that cache and you can turn it off.
When you say there's some hearings about this, does it mean Congress has to get involved in this?
No, there were some hearings FCC hearings about it, about whether it was proper for them to be doing this.
Gotcha.
Kind of thing here.
All right.
They're trying to discuss is it proper to store cookie-like information when you don't even know about it, have not even given permission, and there's no way on your computer unless you go to the Adobe site to turn them off.
Mm-hmm.
So I think probably the hearings are going to result in something where you have to actually opt out of this. It's something more publicly shown for you because because what's happening and this is why this has become an issue, because see all the advertisers, that they all like to track you,
right?
And so as the web browsers have become tightening down in terms of how they allow cookies to be used, the advertisers and the people that have websites have had to find another way to store cookies outside of the browser environment. And it's just a very clever, clever thing to do. Now, of course, this is not a problem on Apple machines because Apple doesn't play Adobe Flash.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe Steve Jobs knew this, and so he said, I just don't want it. I don't know. Maybe I should just take that first one from Maxmin now.
I think we probably should, yeah.
Yeah, I'll take this first one. I also got a forum. This was actually on the forum.
Mm-hmm.
Maxmin goes to the forum. Listen, we need more people to go to the Facebook page for Tech Talk. Go to facebook.com/techtalkonline and contribute to the discussions. You can suggest topics and everything. And Max Min goes on there. He must be a mathematician because they have Max Min algorithms when you're trying to do optimization. So he must be into optimizing theory or something. In regard, now this is a forum discussion from Max Min. In regard to D. Bird's question, that would be David Bird's question.
Yes.
Just have him look at what today is called home theater receivers. That's really what David wants. That is true. There are a lot of choices here. Prices have come way down since he's looked at them. He can get a 5.1 system that'll handle from 2 to 5 speakers for about $200 or up.
That's not bad.
No, a 5.1 speaker, what that means, it has 5 speakers and a woofer, subwoofer. So typically, you have 3 speakers in the front, 1 on the right, 1 on the left, and one in the middle, and you've got 2 in the back. That's your 5 speakers, and then you've got the subwoofer. So that would be 5.1, and that's sort of your typical sound system. MinMax says brands like Onkyo, Sony, Yamaha, Denon are the good ones, and they're carried by Amazon, Best Buy, and G.H. Gregg. Hope this will help David Bird, as I've always enjoyed his work. Well, there are also many other options for home theater that we'll pass on to David later on. First, you got to look at the TV. Now, you know, if you're going to get home theater, you know, all these TV and flat panel displays have come out quite dramatically recently. And now the big rage is 3D.
Uh-huh, yes.
Now, so you can actually get 3D, and I'll tell you, the 3D looks beautiful. Now, the problem is you've got to wear glasses.
Yeah.
you wear these glasses, and what they do is they basically modulate how these work. They actually have two images which are modulated at different frequencies. And so one eye looks at one modulated frequency, the other eye looks at the other modulated frequency, so and you bring them together. If you take off the glasses and look at a TV which is set up for 3D, you'll see two. It looks
blurry.
No, it'll look like two images. You'll mm-hmm. see kind of a shadow image. So you have to turn off the 3D if you don't use glasses. Well, the glasses actually are $300 a piece.
You're kidding me.
So
you couldn't go to a movie and take the 3D glasses home with you and have that work?
No, because the movie is not using...
It's a different technology?
It's not using an active sensor. These are two act. It's a different technology here than what the movie has.
Okay.
So, and so these are actually not just some cheap throwaway. So if you've got if you want to invite over like six people to watch 3D TV...
That's awfully expensive.
Yeah, it's $1,800.
Good grief.
So that's kind of a problem. But that is actually an interesting thing. Now, there's another big development in flat panel display that Bose came out with, the Video Wave.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen that?
I have not seen it.
They've actually integrated all of the surround sound right into the unit itself.
The Wave machine, the old Wave radio.
They just use Video Wave, but they mm-hmm. actually embedded all the speakers right into the television itself.
Ah.
And I went in for a demonstration, and honestly, you feel like there's sound coming from the right and the left and behind you. They use something called phased arrays.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, because when you get directionality from sound, it's because one ear hears a slightly different phase than the other ear, because there's a slight time delay on how long it takes to get to one ear relative to the other ear. And so by having a simple phased array, they can actually make it appear as though the sound is coming from the right or the left. It is actually quite an interesting thing. I went in for a demonstration. I mean, the audiophiles would say, well, yes, but the phased array is not going to handle the full range of frequencies. That's true, but it's got the directionality. So the high pitch tones have got tremendous directionality, and the low pitch tones coming out of the subwoofer, they don't have that, but they never do because they're such low frequency. That is an interesting thing. And the beautiful thing about the Video Wave, well, you don't need any amplifier.
It's all there.
You don't need speakers. You don't need wires. You just put the TV up, and you're ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
So it just takes all the complexity out of it, and you can plug the TV right into the internet. So that, I mean, if you want to make life simple, that seemed like a very nice thing. It's the only downside is it's expensive.
Is it really?
Yeah, I don't know what it is, but it was quite expensive. I didn't really get into the price.
All things Bose are expensive.
Yes, indeed. Now,
how,
of course,
how big was the screen on this thing?
It was a big one. It was like a 50-inch.
Wow.
It was like a big... I mean, you know, you can get a big screen with these things. That's not a problem. Now, of course, if you get a receiver like MinMax recommended, make certain you got enough inputs and outputs to handle all your components. So if you're going to have like a Blu-ray player, and you're going to have like an Xbox and all the other things you want to plug into it, make certain you got enough plugs. Also, make certain that you've got internet access on at least your Blu-ray DVD player. Now, you can also get internet access with your Xbox if you've got it. Now, most new TV sets will also have internet access.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're using an old TV set, you can use internet access in your Blu-ray DVD player or in your receiver or in your Xbox. And the beauty of the internet access is that you can stream Netflix movies, and that is the new distribution.
Yeah, it is.
So with like Netflix, I mean, what do you pay? $10 a month, you can stream unlimited movies. You don't have to return it. You just pick what you want off of a menu. It seems like that is really the way that video distribution is going. Mm-hmm. That is also what's causing the big fight in the background over bandwidth allocation, because like I could be sitting there at home with Fios, and then I just cancel all of my movie channels, which cost me a lot of money from Fios, and then I get Netflix, and I use the Verizon bandwidth. And Verizon says, wait a minute here. We don't want to give all that bandwidth to Netflix. And so then there's the fight over, do they own the bandwidth? Can they restrict the bandwidth? And that's where we get into this internet neutrality laws. And so, and really, all these laws are really sort of a front for fighting over who has the rights to distribute video content over the internet, because that's where it's all going.
Okay.
So that's about all you'd want to know about the surround sound and that sort of thing. But Interesting question from David. I think let's take a break.
Do we have a second for a question from the Peanut Gallery?
Oh, yeah,
because
we do.
This is probably pretty simple for you, but somebody asked me at the office the other day, a bunch of us with iTunes accounts, are wondering how is it best to back this up off of the machine where it is stored. In other words, you've got iTunes, say your computer blows up, and then you've lost your iTunes account. And getting it back from iTunes is not the most easy thing. Have you ever had to do that?
It's a problem.
It is a pain in the neck. Can you back it up on a thumb drive or an external drive? Is this?
Yeah, I actually have it backed up on an external drive.
You do? That's the best way to do it?
And what they do is, I just took and physically copied the files there.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't actually transfer them, because iTunes won't let you have two copies.
Right.
So I actually physically went in to
explore.
Took
the songs off.
I took all the folders with all the names, the entire iTunes thing, and moved it to the other to the hard drive, the other hard drive. And then what happened? Okay. Then I wanted to put my iTunes on another computer. So then I could actually, through the hard drive, I copied the entire iTunes subdirectory to another computer. And then when I went into iTunes, you can simply point at where the library is, and I pointed to that location. Bingo, they were all there.
Yeah.
And what it does, it just re-indexes them, and you're up and running.
See, I had a laptop that was stolen, didn't back it up, and it's been a while since I've been in there. And I wound up having to call iTunes, and it took 2 days at least, and a lot of emails back and forth. And finally, they gave me access to some of my songs.
Yeah.
Some of them have been altered, and they say if the song's been altered somehow, they can't give it back to you. You have to buy it again.
Gee.
Isn't that crazy?
See, then I also had the problem that I had a lot of CDs that I'd ripped into and put MP3s.
Right.
I didn't want to lose all of those.
No.
And then iTunes acts like somehow I've bought those.
Right, exactly.
And then you can't move those around.
No, you can't.
So actually, the other thing I do is I make certain that when I rip a CD to do it, I do it in the unencrypted format without digital rights management on it. You can set it up so that you do that. Then you don't have to worry about all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, that's one of my pet peeves with iTunes.
It's a great thing, but there's a lot of stuff about it not to like. Okay, it is time for a break, isn't it, Doc?
Yes, it is.
We'll be back in just a moment with Profiles on IT here on the where are we?
Tech Talk
on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2. Stay with us.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University. Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. And now it is time for
Profiles in IT.
And today we're going to be featuring Pradeep Sindhu.
Mm-hmm.
Pradeep Sindhu is co-founder and chief technology officer of Juniper Networks. Sindhu is considered a visionary, and I'll explain why later on, in the field of high performance and networked computing. Pradeep Sindhu was born September 4th, 1953, in Mumbai, India.
place where you have some experience.
Yeah, that used to be called Bombay, by the way. Mumbai, India. That's up in the northwest corner. It's in the western side of India, middle of the country. His dad was in the army, so he was always moving all around northern India. He spent a little time in New Delhi while he was growing up, and he attended Mount St. Mary's High School in Delhi. He then wanted to go and get a degree in technology. Of course, in India, you either get a degree in BTech, technology, or communications, BCom. If you want to go to business, you got BTech versus BCom. He wanted to go into BTech, so he got a BTech degree, specialized in electrical engineering. He received that degree in 1974 from IIT in Kanpur. He received a scholarship to go to the University of Hawaii. It's not bad.
No.
So he was there he joined the master's program at University of Hawaii there when he graduated with his BTech degree in 74. And while he was actually in Hawaii, he worked on the AlohaNet packet switching network. You remember when they were developing the internet, DARPA, they had this problem. They got the islands out there and they wanted to communicate, so they had a satellite communication system where they would basically communicate by packets, and it was like an Ethernet configuration, and they could send data between the networks. And he worked on this AlohaNet packet switch network. He worked on the power controller of that, so he was right there at the very beginning of the internet. And the internet, as I say, was actually an internetwork of networks, and so the internet was a device that connected the AlohaNet with another network. All these networks were at the data link layer, and the internet linked all the networks together. It was a network of networks. So it was called internet. So he was working on one of those networks, and he got interested in packet switching. He also learned a little about computers there. They turned out University of Hawaii had one of the first Unix machines that had been put out by Berkeley Software, which was a company that actually had adapted the Unix machines from when Bell Labs, gave them to the universities, because Bell was not allowed to get into computer technology back then. So then he learned about computers, playing around the Unix operating system. He finished there at University of Hawaii in a couple of years, had a great experience, and really, really got to know networking. He decided he wanted to focus on high-performance multiprocessors, so he joined the PhD program at Carnegie Mellon. That's in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, in 1976, and he worked there actually on high performance multiprocessors and operating systems. This was back when multiprocessors were a big deal. I mean, now we've got quad chips and dual core chips. We have a lot of multiprocessors, but back then it was a big deal because they didn't know how to write an operating system that could divide up the code between all the processors and then bring it back together, because you couldn't get lines of code out of synchronization that were being handled in parallel. So a lot of methodology had to be invented in order to allow that to happen. So he worked on that kind of architecture for high-performance systems, which use multiprocessors. He kind of focused on the operating side. He ended up getting a PhD in distributed reliable operating systems in 1982. Then he decided to move to one of the best research labs in the country at that time. This was Xerox Palo Alto Research Center. And it's Palo Alto is a beautiful, beautiful area there out in California. I've walked around that. I've been there. It's really a beautiful campus right there on the beach. And he continued to work on high performance computing. See, there at Xerox PARC, that's what they call it. Palo Alto Research Center is called PARC, PARC. There at PARC, they were planning to do 100 MIPS, millions of instructions per second, workstation called Dragon. That was about 20 or 30 times faster than anything else out there, and he was going to work on that. So he studied tools, design tools for very large-scale integration of integrated circuits with high-speed interconnects and shared memory processors, so that he could make, in VLSI, a multi-core chip or a multiprocessor chip. That was really his niche there. Now, the problem with Xerox PARC is that they never really put anything to market. Xerox was like a paper company. And they had all this high technology stuff like networking and displays. They just never really fielded it. So all the display technology and graphical user interface technology ended up showing up at Apple.
Mm-hmm.
Then all of the multiprocessor high end operating system technology ended up showing up at Sun. So it ended up in all of the Ethernet technology that was invented there ended up showing up at 3Com. And so they actually never fielded anything because they didn't know what to do with it. So that's probably one of the biggest technology failures overall as an organization that we'll see for a good long while. Well, he worked there at Park for 12 years. So first of all, he worked on this multiprocessor system, and they had a suspicion that Park was never going to do anything with it. So they managed to convince the management to let 12 of their guys work at Sun for a few years and transfer the technology. So they transferred their multiprocessor technology to Sun, and that led to Sun's first multiprocessor systems, the SS1000 and the SC2000. And they were all happy that at least the technology was going to go somewhere. So after spending, though, 12 years at Park, he said, you know, I want to get something fielded. So he tried to get an imaging system going, tried to create something else. He never could get it out the door. So finally decided, okay, I'm not getting any younger. I'd better leave. So in 1996, he decided to leave. And he took off a couple of months just to think, okay, I've done a lot of stuff in my career. Now, where am I going to go? And it turns out his wife's parents had a villa in France. What better place to think?
Of course. So one could think a very long time there, couldn't they?
So he went to France, sat in this villa for a couple of months, just thinking. Took a lot of magazines with him, and he was just sort of pondering what was going on. Where are the opportunities? So he looked at local area networking, LAN technology. Said, you know, that's really that field is really filled. There's not a lot of action there because got 3Com in there. And then he decided to look at wide area networking technology. This is the technology that would require you'd have to have routers and you'd have this huge internet. And, of course, this was 1996, right after the browser had come out. All right. So in the early 90s when the browser hit, so around 96, it was clear that there were going to be applications on the internet that would use bandwidth. And that you'd have to find a method for high-speed routing of these packets throughout the internet. And so he thought, well, this is kind of an interesting area, an exploding area that has potential. He found there were three companies in this space, Cisco, Bay Networks, and 3Com. These are all three companies that had all been started out there, of course, in California. And they all built routers by programming just a regular computer to move packets. So they took a regular computer, they programmed it, and it moved packets. Well, they were slow.
Mm-hmm.
And so he said, look, I've been building architectures that are much more suited for this. And these guys that are in the field of wide area networks, Cisco, Bay Networks, and 3Com, are like 5 to 6 years behind me, behind the technology that I just finished working on. Because what he said was, if you really look at this data switching, there are two things. You've got the logic of the routing tables deciding, okay, this packet's got to go there or there or there. And that could be done in a regular programmed computer. But then you've got this data plane where you're just trying to speed these packets through really fast. And it probably doesn't make sense in your data plane to be sitting there with a programmable computer. And so he thought the data plane should actually be all in silicon. And that's just what he'd been working on. So he designed an architecture that would speed the networks through in an all-silicon environment, and then he'd do the control circuitry just as a regular Intel chip, which had been programmed, an x86 chip, as it's been programmed. And that actually architecture would scale to very high speeds. So from September to October, November, for 3 months in 1995, he worked on a design with the programmable control plane and a data plane to move the silicon packets. This was his vision, and in 3 months, he actually came up with the architecture. Then he needed money.
That always happens, right?
He said, I've quit. I've quit my job at Park. I'm sitting over in this French villa. This is nice. But my wife's parents are wondering, what's this guy doing? Is he going to go anywhere with his career? He said, so I need some money. So he went to three VCs. These are venture capitalists. And they turned him down. They said, look, there are a lot of people in the space. You guys, you're a Johnny come lately.
Yeah.
You don't have anything. And finally, on the fourth one, this was another VC. And the guy the technical guy, but it was Vinod Khosla. He actually funded it with his venture capital company, And he funded the idea. He agreed to fund it in December of 1995. He said, okay, this is a good idea, because it was, he only had a conceptual drawing. He hadn't built anything. He just had the architecture of this new router laid out. And so he got the thing funded. And so then in Pradeep Sindhu founded Juniper Networks in February of 1996, along with a couple other guys, Dennis Ferguson and Bjorn Lienkrey.
Good try.
Lienkrey. What do you think? Think that's it?
I don't speak Bjorn,
now,
so I don't know.
Now, Sindhu, he was instrumental, of course, in the architecture, the design, and the development of the first Juniper router, which was the M40 data router. And this is also while he was running the company. Now, it took actually 2 years and 3 months to build that router.
Mm-hmm.
From pen and pencil design, through silicon design, through software programming, and then launch. They received their first order from Cable and Wireless. It's a local company here. Their second order came from UUNET, also a company out here, two companies out here in Virginia. And their first machine was powered up April or May of 1998, and they shipped their first machine in August. Now, the benchmark up to that point had been sent by Cisco. But, of course, Cisco machine was slow. It was kind of a low end.
Right.
This first machine, right out of the bat, it cost $1.5 million, and it ran OC48, which is optical cable 48, which is around 2.5 gigabit per second, which at that time was just screaming. Now, right now, that looked like a baby machine.
Right.
But that, back then, that was a screamer. So he opened up a whole other end of the market. In 1999, he had sold 100 million worth of routers. In 2000, he sold 400 million in routers. In 2001, he sold 900 million in routers. Now, all of the customers, as you would expect, were telco carriers. These were the big ISPs that had, so these were, he was running high-end routers at the high end of the marketplace. Cisco was at the low end of the marketplace in the router business. Now, Juniper went public June 25th, 1999. When it went public in the beginning of the day, it was $34 a share.
Wow.
By the end of the day, it had risen to $98 a share. It almost tripled in one day.
Amazing.
So these guys that bought in on the pre-IPO price made a killing.
Mm-hmm.
The market capitalization that first day was $4.9 billion. Mm. Now, Pradeep actually is a technical guy. He didn't want to run a company. He said, I'm not a CEO kind of guy. So then they looked around for 9 months. All the VCs did a lot of interviews, and they picked a replacement CEO for him 9 months later, and he went back to become chief technology officer of Juniper Networks. So that was kind of the sort of the whole story of Pradeep as a technical guy that actually found the right niche, and you can see how he was at the right place at the right time. He had experience with networks. He had experience with computers, with the Unix operating system. He had experience with designing VLSI and multi-core operating systems. And all of that then could be applied to this new development, which was the high bandwidth for the Internet. The right guy with the right background at the right time really made a killing with Juniper Networks.
It does seem that timing is everything, because we've talked about a lot of these guys on Profiles in IT that came from a technical background, came up with something really cool, or started something that's become a big deal, and they missed the time to make the money.
Yeah, he had to do it then.
Yeah.
And now the thing that was that was kind of interesting was that you wondered why Cisco didn't buy them out.
Mm-hmm.
You see, because normally Cisco buys out their competition. So you would think that Cisco would have bought them out, and then they would have owned the high end of the marketplace, but they did not.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And somebody asked him that. I was reading an interview by him, and he actually said they had no interest in selling out. He never heard Cisco trying to make an offer, but if they would have made an offer, he would have turned it down. So there's all you need to know about Juniper and networks.
Gotcha. Very good. You're listening to Tech Talk. This is Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 1077 FM HD2, 1035 FM HD2. Hope you were paying attention, because in just a moment, you'll have a chance to win a fabulous prize from us just by knowing the answer to the pop quiz. The number to call is 877-936-9333. 877-936-9333. Once again, 877-936-9333. Stand by. More of Tech Talk coming up in just a moment.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
According to the U.S. Bureau of Labor, five of the 30 occupations projected to grow the fastest by 2016 are IT-related, led by network and data communications analysts, software engineers, and systems analysts. 70% of business technology professionals surveyed by Information Week say there is a shortage of IT talent in the U.S. today. However, if you have previous military or management experience, there are tremendous opportunities for you in the IT field if you retrain. Stratford University's bachelor's degree in information technology prepares you to analyze, design, implement, administer, and secure computer networks and information systems. Master's degrees are also offered in information systems and software engineering. Day and evening classes are offered so you can continue in your current field. Call Stratford University at 800-444-0804 or visit online at stratford.edu. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University, Tyson's Corner in Woodbridge.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
It's time for America's favorite new game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now, here's the host and star of our show. It's not Bob Barker. It's not Rosie O'Donnell. No, it's not Richard Dawson. It's Dr. Richard Schertz.
You thought this was a radio show.
Well, no. You know what? I'm not playing this game
this
anymore.
This is a classroom of the airwaves.
Right, okay.
Classroom of the radio airwaves.
I see, yes.
Yes, indeed. So, earlier in the show, I was talking about Pradeep Sindhu, and he, of course, is the man, the co-founder, and the man behind Juniper Networks. And as he was sort of meandering toward that fateful day when he started Juniper Networks, he had several experiences. He learned something about packet switch networks, learned something about Unix operating systems, learned something about multi-core operating systems, and something about VLSI. Of all of that packet, I want to focus on the packet switching network and systems. What was the first packet switching network system that he worked on while he was in graduate school?
Gotcha. It was on an island when he did this.
Yes,
okay,
indeed.
That might help. And if you know the answer to that question, call us right now at 877-936-9333. 877-936-9333. Once again, 877-936-9333. 9333, and Andrew is standing by to take your calls.
Apple turned 35 this week. Actually, they turned 35 on April 1st. Isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm.
April Fool's Day. It's an interesting history there on Apple. Apple started on April 1st, 1976, in Steve Jobs' garage in Cupertino, California. The actual corporation, as we know it today, was officially incorporated in 1977 as Apple Computer Inc. Now, with the creation of all of their products, the original Apple, the Macintosh, the iPod, the iPad, and the iPhone, Apple now has a market value of $321 billion.
Mm.
Well, most of us know the two Steves. That would be Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak,
right,
the computer correctors. There's actually a third guy who was also a founder there, Ron Wayne. Now, Ron Wayne was given 10% stake in Apple. And he gave it back.
Ugh.
Because he said, look, he said, Steve, I like you guys, but, you know, I got a job.
Yeah.
I've got some assets here. If you guys go down the toilet and I'm part owner of this company, they're going to come and take my car. I cannot take the risk of being part of this company. So he gave back his stake in Apple for $2,300.
Oh, no.
Less than 2 weeks after receiving it.
Oh, no.
Now, you know, because Wayne is kind of a conservative guy, he doesn't want to take any chances at
right.
all. Now, other reports peg it that the buyout price was $800, so it's not really documented. So it was somewhere between $800 and $2,300, regardless of what the price was when he sold it back. Had he kept all of those shares, he would be worth $22 billion today.
Could have bought a few cars for that, couldn't he?
Okay, Ron Wayne, happy birthday.
Yeah.
That was probably one of the dumbest business moves I've seen in a long time. Now, the Apple I was their first computer. Now, it really wasn't much of a computer. It was actually a kit.
Mm-hmm.
It was actually a circuit board with about 60 chips. It was actually designed by Steve Wozniak. You know, they were in this hackers club, and they were making all kinds of things like that. It was a circuit board with about 60 chips. It had a 1 megahertz processor, 4 kilobytes of memory, a few video chips. That was it. No keyboard, no monitor, not even a case or a power supply. It sold for $666. There were only 200 of those made. The 82nd unit of those 200 was on auction at Christie's last fall, and it sold for $213,000.
Wow.
So of those original ones, it's quite good. Well, happy birthday, Apple. Happy 35th birthday. And Ron Wayne, don't cry too much.
Mm. Yeah, I know. I'm surprised they didn't give him some money out of all. No, I guess.
They gave him $2,300.
Well, I mean, after the fact, whatever. We have somebody on the phone. Let's change subjects here. This is Jim calling from Vienna, Virginia. Jim, good morning, and thanks for calling. How are you?
Good morning. Great.
Okay, Dr. Schertz, go ahead and ask the question.
Good morning, Jim. Thanks for calling. When Pradeet was actually in his graduate school, what was the name of the first packet switch network that he worked on?
Well, he was at the University of Hawaii, so it must have been the Aloha Network.
That is correct.
Why, that's the correct answer.
Correct. Very good.
Jim, excellent. Do you listen to us often?
Every Saturday while I'm making breakfast.
That's great. Thank you, Jim, for listening. Thank you for calling. Stand by on the phone, and we will have Andrew take your information and get those tickets to the Escoffier at Stratford or Cafe Kareem, right?
Kareem down at Woodbridge. Yeah,
right.
We have fine dining there on Thursday nights.
Okay, all right. Hang on, Jim, and Andrew will be right with you. You're listening to Tech Talk. This is Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2, and we'll be right back after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University. Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We're in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. Did you have any April Fool's jokes yesterday, Jim? Anything?
There was one that popped up on a broadcasting blog that I thought, well, you know, there's really other news happening out there, mm-hmm. and this guy gave up the news for something that was stupid and unbelievable. So, yeah.
So there's a little bit of that.
Nothing really happened at the office. No.
Well, every year, Google, of course, just turns their folks loose to come up with some April Fool's jokes. Some of them are really quite good. This year's are rather lame. There were like 9 or 10 of them. I'll just give a few of them here.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, they had one article where they viewed to hire more people as auto-completers for the search engine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you type in the thing, it auto-completes it for you.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
they're saying they've got people in the background, you know, they've outsourced that, so people are back there auto-completing for us.
Oh, no.
So
this could be a problem.
This is lame. Now they also had Gmail Motion, which allows you to compose and reply to Gmail messages using your body. Now Gmail Motion uses your computer's webcam and Google's patented spatial tracking technology to detect your movements and translate them into characters and commands.
Interesting.
So you go in there and you read all about it, then you click on to try to find out how it works, and finally they say, April Fools. Then they had Google China. Google China is offering teleportation. They say, just don't do search research. Actually visit the place. So you...
sure.
Yeah, so they went there. Then they had Gmail Motion. This is a lot like... Voice Analyzer. Then they had Voice... Oh, this is not Gmail Motion, but Gmail Docs Motion, called Docs Motion. And so Docs Motion lets you control documents with gestures. And so they have over 10,000 supported gestures and emotions. They have this voice analyzer that will actually, you have to just read in everyday words, and it analyzes your voice to decide whether you're slightly impaired. And if in case you are impaired, they won't let you make a voice call or send you a text message. They're trying to protect you from drunk dialing.
Oh, good grief.
This is lame, don't you think?
It's very lame. Yeah.
They also, to help improve typing speed, they've got Chromercise. It's a new exercise regimen that loosens the hands and fingers while simultaneously tightening and toning your fingers' actual appearance.
So you can become a hand model.
Yeah, Chromercise. Mm. And they also had a special celebration. YouTube was celebrating its 100th anniversary. And they had a section on the top viral videos from 1911.
Right. I bet that was exciting.
Yeah, yeah. They got a bunch of Model T cars there and old videos.
Picture the first traffic accident.
Yeah, then they've got the Google Body Browser. It shows the anatomical details of a human. Now, they didn't want to show a person, so they actually gave an example of a bovine object. So you can look at the inside of it. I don't know. It was lame. This last year, it was so much better.
Yeah.
Google, you've got to just clean up your act.
Now, well, it was better when they'd pick one thing,
it was just one thing. Yeah, it was much better.
Yeah.
It was much better. See, they should have had a competition and just gone with one.
Exactly. That's right, because this way it's just too...
Okay.
You know what it is.
I know. Microsoft has caved in to political pressure. I didn't get to this last week, and this is kind of... See, Microsoft has removed HTTPS, which is the encrypted version of Hotmail for many U.S. embargoed or otherwise troubled countries. Now, they no longer support HTTPS in Bahrain, Morocco, Algeria, Syria, Sudan, Iran, Lebanon, Jordan, Congo, Myanmar, Nigeria, Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan. Turkmenistan, Tajikistan, and...
Good luck, because I don't know that one either.
Kyrgyzstan.
Works for
me. So anyway, the thing is, when you have HTTPS, your entire communication with the web browser is encrypted, so they can't pick up your password and all. And so it gives you some degree of security. And these countries apparently want to be snooping on what emails you're writing, and so they've dropped it off. By the way, you can configure your Gmail so it's always HTTPS. Go to configuration and make certain it's always HTTPS.
Well, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I never log on to any of the email accounts unless I'm in HTTPS, because people can intercept your passwords.
Interesting.
Now, tip of the week.
Yes.
Getting rid of headphone cable kink.
This is news you can use.
Yeah, that's right. This is a tip from Kevin on the Life Hacker website. I love that. I love that website, Life Hacker. He's a good guy.
Ah, you know Kevin.
And I don't know him.
But you're familiar with his work.
I'm familiar with his work, and he's a good guy. And so, he accidentally let his earbuds, this is a little thing, go through the washer and dryer. They still function well, but the cords were all curled up and gnarly. And so he wanted to kind of like straighten them out. Have you ever had all these little tiny cables? So what he did, he took a glass and he wrapped the cables around it very tightly. And then he put some tape on it to hold them in place. And then he filled the glass with boiling water.
Oh.
And then he just let it cool down to room temperature. And when he took it off, all the kinks were gone and it had that nice
round, kind of coiled.
Uh-huh. It was kind of a coiled look. Because by cooling it down, it was sort of like annealing the rubber. It sort of cooled down, and it just maintained that shape. So it was important to heat it up and then let it cool down slowly. There you go. Get rid of the kink cables, tip of the week.
That's pretty funny. Hey, Doc, let's take a break because we've got a couple of those to get through here. This is Federal News Radio and Tech Talk. You're listening to us on 1500 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2, and not to forget, 820 in Frederick, Maryland. Stand by. Be right back.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio.
IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University.
Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We're in the virtual faculty lounge of Stratford University talking technology. This last week, thousands of websites appear to have been compromised by a cyber attack. Now, what happened was they hacked into the sites, and then they put up a display window calling itself the Windows Stability Center.
Oh, no.
And then it said that they had detected some viruses on the machine, and they asked you to click here, and they'll fix it. But what it did, it redirected you to a malicious website for further exploitation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they succeeded in getting this particular bit of code on these websites because they basically used a method called SQL injection. This is where your structured query language, which is a standard database which is used on the back end of these websites, and sometimes they don't filter the input to the SQL processing engine, and they append a bunch of malicious code on the back, which is not truncated, and that malicious code actually then executes something and gives you access to the data. Then once you've got access to the back end, you can do whatever you want. This is the common way of actually getting into websites, and they really should work on this, but this is a problem everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
The security firm WebSense has been tracking this attack since March 29th, only a couple days ago. So 2,800,000 sites were compromised. The fake security software warns you about a non-existent virus. It sends you the attack was usually going after Microsoft SQL servers 2003 and 2005. Now, it then sent you to 21 different domains because they had different code that they would inject. So 21 different codes were sent off, and then they 21 different domains were the sort of the target domain where they would send you if you'd click on it. It turned out they've located all those domains. They've shut them down. So now if you go there, you're going to be shut down. So I think the danger's gone, but we still have to watch out for this SQL injection, one of the most successful SQL injection attacks in recent time. Let's talk a little bit about the website of the week.
Yes.
The website of the week is solarsystemscope.com, www.solarsystemscope.com. Now, the Solar System Scope is an interactive 3D model of the universe. It's really great graphics. Mm-hmm. They call it SSS for Solar System Scope. SSS will illustrate real-time celestial positions with planets and constellations and moving through the night sky. And you can actually move your mouse and you can look at the solar system from different directions. You can speed it up, slow it down. You can see all the planets going around and rotating. It's a great way. It's a great interactive tool to show kids all about the solar system. So it's a wonderful education tool. I really enjoyed playing around with it, and I think you might want to show it to your kids. SolarSystemScope.com, the website of the week.
Gotcha. You want to take a break and talk about the book of the week? All right. You are listening to Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2. Our final segment comes up right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Demand is great for IT professionals that can gain a security clearance. According to a recent Federal Computer Week article, federal agencies and private sector businesses that support government contracts can't get enough credentialed people to keep pace with government work. Tremendous opportunities exist for mid-career and late-career workers if they are retrained, particularly if they have had previous military service. Stratford University's bachelor's degree in information technology prepares students to analyze, design, implement, administer, and secure computer networks and information systems. Master's degrees are also offered in information systems and software engineering. Day and evening classes are offered so you can continue in your current field. Call Stratford University at 800-444-0804 or visit online at stratford.edu. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University, Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge of Stratford University talking technology. Let's talk about quickly the book of the week, How Science Will Change Daily Life by 2100 by Michio Kaku. Now, Kaku, of course, was co-founder of a branch of string theory, which I'm not going to talk about here.
Okay, that's a good idea.
Kind of like trying to unify the universe. He admired both Albert Einstein and Flash Gordon. He loved science. He also loved science fiction. And so these are some of his predictions. We'll have the internet with eyeballs within the next 20 to 50 years. The internet will be in your contact lenses. You'll blink and you go online. When you talk to people, you'll see their biographies printed out. When someone speaks to you in Chinese, you'll see subtitles appearing under their name. So you'll have internet access instantly. We'll have augmented virtual reality the next 20 to 50 years. This is like the Matrix. Tourists will love it because if you walk the streets of Rome, the Roman Empire will arise in your contact lenses. Overlaying images of the real world will have more practical applications, like a soldier might wear special lenses that would help them see enemy locations superimposed over real-life scenes. We'll have shape-shifting. Within the next 50 years, by 2050, nanotechnology will let us literally change the world around us, not with shape-shifting metallic people, with objects we can rearrange with a few keystrokes. By mid-century, programmable matter will start to open up. You'll simply write a software program. You can literally change a chair into a table.
Wow.
Technology will involve tiny chips the size of a grain of sand. They'll have charges on them. They can attach in various ways. If you type chair, you'll get a chair. If you type table, you'll get a table. It's all coming from nanotechnology. And it's actually real. We'll have helpful robots. We'll bring back extinct animals in the next 100 years. Advances in genetic research combined with accelerated discovery of new ice age fossils will allow us to bring back extinct animals like Jurassic Park. So there's a few things from predicted by Kaku. It's an interesting topic. We're almost out of time. We love your emails.
Yeah.
Email us at techtalk@stratford.edu. Go to facebook.com/techtalkonline techtalkonline to make a comment about the show. You can also go to techtalkonline.com to sign up for the podcast. And don't forget to go to www.stratford.edu and tell them that you heard about them on Tech Talk.
That's right. And we will see you next week here on Tech Talk.
This is a paid commercial program and may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of Washington Nationals baseball, Washington Capitals hockey, the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, and American University Eagles basketball. Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m., the Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics, and your source for federal news now.
Catch our replay tomorrow at 6 p.m. Right now, it's overcast, 46 degrees in the nation's capital at 10 a.m.
This is a paid commercial program and may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Blueprint for Wealth, a program dedicated to securing your personal dreams of wealth and freedom. Now, here's your host, Wayne Zell.
Good morning and welcome to Blueprint for Wealth. I'm Wayne Zell and welcome to a very fast-paced half hour of special topics and special guests designed to help you realize your personal dreams.